Maybe I shouldn't say that. It is a minute before 9 o'clock. Hello, you are listening to KBOO, your community radio station, on a Thursday morning. Coming up in about 1/2 hour, we will hear Per Fogring with his show, Fight the Empire. Today's guest is Pepe Escobar, and he'll talk about BRICS Bank and a looming war in Russia, or should I say war with Russia. Then at 10 o'clock today, it's Air Cascadia with cutting-edge news, views, and just plain horse sense with Chris Andre. At 10:15, we'll hear Flashpoint's investigative news journalism with host Dennis Bernstein. At 11 today on Between the Covers, host Ken Jones speaks with highly prolific author William T. Volman, whose latest work is a collection of supernatural tales entitled Last Stories and Other Stories. And then at 11:30, we'll hear Black Book Talk with host Patricia Welsh. Today's guest is Portland author Dolores Dallas, author of the memoir I Thought I Wouldn't Tell It, a memoir of hard life and hope. It's all coming up this morning on KBOO. Coming up next, it is Teresa Mitchell with Press Watch and all the news you're not supposed to know.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Drones in Oregon, Myths, Facts, and Futures, a community forum about the use of drones. This community forum on the use of drones will take place Thursday, August 7th from 7 to 9:30 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church, Southwest 12th and Salmon in Portland. Speakers include retired Army Colonel Ann Wright, Brian Whiteside, Peter Lumsdain, and Oregon State Representative Jennifer Williamson. Again, that's Drones in Oregon, a community forum on Thursday, August 7th at the First Unitarian Church in Portland. More information at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.
This is Press Watch on KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. This is the news you're not supposed to know. Good morning, 9:02 in Cascadia. And I'm glad to have you with me on KBOO 90.7 FM and KBOO.fm. Several headline news items today, and I'd like to also talk about the methane apocalypse. Let's start with the Jim Crow drug war. There's an article in the Scanner today talking about who takes the brunt of the Seattle pot ordinance. It's an article by Helen Silvis, and you just won't believe this, but it's homeless people and black people. And she writes, when Washington voters legalized marijuana, Seattle passed an ordinance that forbids using pot in public. Now a report on the first 6 months of the new law shows one Seattle police officer wrote 66 of 83 tickets issued for using marijuana in public. The report found that homeless people who congregate in downtown Seattle's West Precinct received 41% of the tickets, and blacks received 37%, although they make up only 8% of Seattle's population. Gerald Hankerson, president of Seattle King County NAACP and also president of the NAACP Regional Conference, said results of the ordinance were predictable. Find more on that at thescanner.com. And other breaking news, Hawaii officials are bracing for two hurricanes, Hurricane Exxon and DuPont, which are on track to become the first hurricanes to hit the islands in 22 years. Actually, it's Hurricane Isel, but I think they should have corporate names. Category 1, Isel, is expected to hit Thursday evening. That's tonight. And Category 2, Julio, or Julio, excuse me. I'm just used to saying Julio when I say J-U-L-I-O. Anyway, is traveling closely behind Giselle and expected to hit over the weekend. Of course, according to the National Weather Service, Giselle was last reported to be 345 miles southeast of Hilo, moving towards the Big Island at 18 miles per hour, expected to bring heavy rains, winds gusting up to 85, and flash flooding in coastal areas. That hurricane was weakening at one point on Wednesday, but it has since picked up speed. Hawaii's Big Island is under a hurricane warning, while Maui and Oahu are under tropical storm watches. Public schools are closed on the Big Island. Maui, Molokai, and Lanai. Hurricane Julio appears to be stronger than Giselle right now, with maximum winds of 100 miles per hour. It was last reported to be 1,300 miles southeast of Hilo, and Hawaii hasn't been hit hard by a hurricane since 92, when Hurricane Iniki hit it really, really hard and just absolutely scoured Kauai and killed six people. That was a terrifying sight to see in the news, and more terrifying if you're there, I'm sure. More headlines. This is Press Watch, news you're not supposed to know. Israel has demanded the demilitarization of the Gaza Strip as a condition to extend the 72-hour ceasefire that took effect on Tuesday, a condition that has stalled negotiations, according to Palestinian reports. This from Al Jazeera. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said Gaza must be demilitarized and has demanded the disarmament of Hamas and other armed groups. Hamas has flatly refused. Being a resistance movement, this is hardly surprising. That's just me talking. Oh, and speaking of just me talking, got a really interesting photograph from Cryptome. This is a great day for interesting photographs. You'll hear more about that in a minute. But you can find that, put that up. I put that up on the Press Watch. Let's see, what do you call it? The Press Watch, I'm going to do this show page, whatever it is. It's on kboo.fm/PressWatch, or probably you can find it at kboo.fm. Have a good look and a good click on that photo. That is a cluster munition. As you can tell by the markings on the nose of the gigantic shell it's being loaded by an Israeli soldier. So when you hear that, when you hear the phrase surgical strike, just remember that picture. Oh, and by the way, I know I've said it before, but what the hell is a surgical strike? I mean, does your doctor operate by throwing M80 firecrackers at you? Oh, darn, miss. Well, we better try that again. Got to get that gallbladder. No. That's just propaganda. That's just mind control. There's no such damn thing as a surgical strike with bombs, for God's sake. But returning to the Al Jazeera article, Hamas counter-demand for the establishment of sea and airports has been met with silence from the Israeli side, according to Haaretz. Israel has reportedly expressed willingness to consider Hamas other conditions, including the lifting of the 7-year blockade on the occupied territory. And once again, just me speaking, yeah, it's a hell of a blockade. It's such a blockade that the calorie requirements are established for each Palestinian, estimated, and that is all they will let through the wall, which surrounds the whole area. I don't know where to start with all this. Anyway, returning to the article, they've also asked for opening of border crossings, extending of Gaza's fishing area so they can actually go out there and catch fish, and release of... Oh, well, there's more than that. You can find that at aljazeera.com. And since the beginning of the truce, they write, which is set to expire at 8 p.m. local time Friday, rocket fire and shelling between Israel and Hamas has stopped. Many of the nearly half a million displaced Gazans returned to their neighborhoods to inspect damage to their homes, and Israelis living in towns near Gaza were able to move about more freely without restrictions on outdoor activities and rocket warning sirens sounding. And if you're wondering what the destruction looks like, just pull up Gaza on YouTube, and dare you to watch it without crying. Dare you. More news headlines. This is KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. This is Press Watch. And quoting Reuters, the army blockaded rural areas hit by the deadly Ebola virus in Sierra Leone today. And this is after neighboring Liberia declared a state of emergency to tackle the worst outbreak of the disease, which has killed 932 people. Worried Liberians queued at banks, stocked up on food and markets in ramshackle capital Monrovia. I didn't say ramshackle. That was the article from Reuters. Sorry about that. While others took buses to unaffected parts of the West African country after President Ellen Johnson's Sirleaf announced the power is lasting for 90 days late on Wednesday. I just don't like the word ramshackle. I'll agree. It's pretty clear the place is a mess and for good reason. But I don't know. Words and phrases, you know, they have power. Anyway, returning to the article, the state of emergency allows Liberia's government to curtail civil rights and to deploy troops and police to impose quarantines on badly affected communities to try to contain an epidemic that has struck four West African nations. Everyone is afraid this morning. That's a quote of Cephas Togba, a civil servant. He told that to Reuters by telephone. He said, big and small, they are all panicking. Everyone is stocking up the little they have, end quote. With troops setting up checkpoints outside Monrovia on the way to some of the worst-hit towns, Johnson Sirleaf justified the measures by saying the state of emergency was necessary for the very survival of our state and for the protection of the lives of our people. In Geneva, the World Health Organization experts were due to hold a second day of meetings to agree on emergency measures to tackle the, get this, highly contagious virus. More on that in a minute. To tackle the highly contagious virus and whether to declare an international public health emergency after a trial drug based on the tobacco plant was administered to two U.S. charity workers. Ebola specialists have urged the World Health Organization to offer Africans the chance to take such experimental drugs. The U.N. agency has asked medical ethics experts to explore this option next week. Much more on that article. It's on Reuters. Can't quote the whole thing, of course. Wouldn't be right. But regarding transmissibility, we've been hearing for months now, and especially in the last few weeks and even the last few days, and you can probably find articles today that will say that Ebola is not easily transmissible, and it's all due to crazy funeral habits. We can see that this is obviously not the case. And, of course, I do not have expertise in medical science, but I think I'll simply repeat myself. You can see that this is obviously not the case. This is highly transmissible. How? Don't know the vectors. But hopefully that will be discovered soon. Press Watch News you're not supposed to know. One more, maybe that's a couple more breaking news items. Let's talk about the planet. An estimated 1.5 million migrating Fraser River sockeye salmon are destined for Quesnel Lake. This is in British Columbia we're talking about here, a few hundred miles north of the place I'm broadcasting from right now. And this is from the Earth First Journal, and they write that Quesnel Lake has now been contaminated by the Mount Polly mine tailings pond spill. The Quesnel system sockeye make up a major portion of what's hoped to be a record run this year, according to Salmon Society. And quoting Mr. Orr from that society, this is one of the greatest environmental disasters we've had on the Fraser River. Some of the effluent will be getting in the Fraser. The big question is how concentrated, how harmful it will be. Some of these compounds have short-term impacts and some have much larger-term impacts. And departing from that article, of course, the problem is when you get heavy metals into salmon, they bioaccumulate, not just in the salmon, but in other critters, including you, when you eat it. And that's the whole problem with the Fukushima radiation, which is only just now arriving in the context of disasters that don't seem to have directly to do, but which may be exacerbated by Fukushima radiation, hard to say. And those disasters would include the complete wipeout of starfish on this coast. Yeah, go down there and find yourself starfish. Once again, dare you. Bet you can't find any. No one seems to be able to. They're wiped out. And, salmon die-offs, and there's whales dying, and there's sea lions dying, and there's a whole lot of dying going on. But all that corporate profit just seems to be going up and up and up. Just thought I'd put in that silver lining. It's a really, really thin silver lining, and you need a hell of a ladder to get to it. Returning to the article, estimated 1.5 million sockeye bound for fouled Quesnel Lake from Earth First. Hooray for Earth First. People have to be concerned about not just what it means for the returning fish, but for the juveniles rearing in the lake right now. That's a quote from Mr. Orr again. He said, Mr. Orr again. He said, we don't know if it's going to accumulate in their bodies or potentially affect their olfactions, their ability to find their home waters. That's my first use of the word olfactions on the air. How's your olfactions? Things smell pretty good in here for the moment. 9:14. You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. Lucky you, you're tuned into KBOO, and you're going to be listening to Per Fagering in 15 minutes, and he has an excellent interview, as you might expect, with Pepe Escobar, one of the best writers, and many topics there, so stay tuned for that. Continuing with Earth headlines. Well, actually, I would like to invite your comments at this point. Questions, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187, that's KBOO. I'll give that number again in a minute. In a region that is already warming faster than any other on Earth, scientists now say we have more to fear than just thawing permafrost and melting sea ice in the Arctic. That's according to Nunatsiak Online, indigenous publication. Just a week into their research along the Siberian coast, they write, scientists from Sweden's Stockholm University have discovered that the seabed of the Arctic Ocean is releasing significant amounts of methane, the potent greenhouse gas considered to be one of the main drivers of climate change. By analyzing water samples, scientists working the Arctic Ocean Climate Research Program say they found vast methane plumes escaping from the seafloor at depths between 50 and 100, between 500 and 150 meters. That would be around, 470 feet. In several places, the methane bubbles even rose to the surface. This was somewhat of a surprise, wrote Chief Scientist Orjan Gustafsson, who is with the program. He speculates that the leaking methane from the seafloor of the continental slope may stem from collapsing methane hydrates or clusters of methane trapped in frozen water due to low temperatures and high pressures. And departing from this, I first started talking about this 10 years ago. Here we are, 2014, vast methane releases. I'm so sorry. I don't know what to say at this point. I'm not going to kid myself that we're not beyond the trigger point. On the other hand, this is a great place for beer. Yep. Good whiskeys around here, too. But I'm just kidding. Of course, we do have to struggle, don't we? And there are things that can be done. Vast, ugly, unscientific, desperate things, which I'm not going to mention right now because the political climate is just not right. And I think I can say, with a few exceptions, y'all don't want to hear it either. Maybe this is the news you don't want to hear. The too late news. What I'm saying here is that the clathrate guns trigger has been pulled. But returning to the article from Nunatsiak Online, regardless of what's causing the release of methane from the seabed, climate scientists agree the most troubling aspect of the discovery is the methane bubbles that are making it to the ocean's surface. Jason Box, the climatologist who was famous for discovering the soot phenomenon in Greenland, who measured the rapid melting just before the catastrophic melting last year around this time, is quoted saying, if even a small fraction of Arctic seafloor carbon is released to the atmosphere, we're effed. End quote. But the researchers hope the discovery can shed light on what's in store for a warming Arctic Ocean. You can find more on that at Nunatsiak Online. But let me just back that up with an article by Amy Eddings on Ring of Fire Radio. Scientists aboard the Swedish icebreaker ship Odin, working to measure the level of methane emissions escaping from the Arctic seafloor, have uncovered startling results. A week into their journey, the international team of scientists reported elevated methane levels about 10 times higher than background seawater. The methane levels may be higher, the team says, because of relatively warm water coming from the Atlantic Ocean and mixing with the colder Arctic. A press release from the University of Stockholm said, by use of acoustic techniques and geochemical analyses of water samples, the scientists found vast methane plumes, there's that phrase again, vast methane plumes escaping from the seafloor at depths from 500 meters and 150. At several places, the methane bubbles even rose to the ocean's surface. What's more, results of preliminary analyses of seawater samples pointed towards levels of dissolved methane 10 to 50 times higher than background levels. The scientists call these methane plumes mega flares. And Chief Scientist Orjan Gustafsson wrote on his blog that this team is hypothesizing that this heating may lead to the destabilization of the upper portion of the slope of methane hydrates. This may be what we now, for the first time, are observing. Methane doesn't last as long in the atmosphere as carbon dioxide, but it's 20 times more powerful as a greenhouse gas. Jason Box, quoting again, professor of glaciology at the Geological Survey of Denmark and Greenland, calls the megaflares damn scary and said that, quote, sea ice reduction is destabilizing the shallow Arctic Ocean continental shelf waters. Without the reflective cover, the ocean is taking on a lot more solar heat during the 24-hour summer days, making it harder for the sea ice to reform, in a self-compounding feedback process, end quote. And departing from the text, the gun. Anyway, also quoting Box, the trajectory we're on is to awaken a runaway climate heating that will ravage global agricultural systems, leading to mass famine and conflict. Sea level rise will be a small problem by comparison. We simply must lower atmospheric greenhouse gas emissions. This is an all hands on deck moment. We're in the age of consequences, end quote. Number to call with your comments or questions, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. Temperatures in the Arctic are rising at twice the global average rate, according to Eric Holthaus in Slate. Huge wildfires are sweeping through vast tracts of Canadian forest, and mysterious holes are appearing in the Siberian permafrost. Through 2014, a recurring kink in the jet stream, possibly rooted in the declining Arctic sea ice, has helped to alternately bake the west and chill out the east by disturbing the typically stable polar vortex. Now there's a new side effect of the Arctic becoming increasingly ice-free. Big waves. Got more on that article, but Gordon's on the air. 503-231-8187. Hi, Gordon.
Hi, Teresa. So what do you think about going after the shareholders? I think they're ultimately responsible for what's going on. It's the shareholders of these corporations. Not the corporations, the shareholders that are pushing the profit.
It's so worth a shot. Let's go after the shareholders. Let's stop subsidizing the great petroleum industries. Let's raise a hue and cry as we actually experience this climate emergency. As hurricanes, as I was saying, Exxon and DuPont are heading for Hawaii, as water is swamping Florida, even without a storm approaching, these are just tidal waters are disturbing the street systems in Florida. As it is now happening, let's confront the deniers. Let's say what's happening. The deniers,
Teresa, the deniers are the shareholders who are sitting in places and that are criminals sitting on their sofas watching all this stuff happen in front of them. And then all of a sudden, then we got people like the scientists coming out with chemtrails and they're going ahead and spraying and exacerbating the situation. And then you have NASA coming out saying we have less than 14 years to live on this planet because of all the stuff that's going on. So I think we need to go after the shareholders who are complacent criminals of these major corporations, and we start there.
I'm fine with that. That's a good place to start. Go ahead. Thanks for your call. Number to call, 503-231-8187. The house-sized waves measured by University of Washington oceanographer Jim Thompson and his research team during a Beaufort Sea storm in 2012 are bigger than any seen before in that part of the Arctic, where it's warmer now than at any point since humans began living there 44,000 or so years ago. Previously, there was just too much ice for waves to form. The waves aren't just a symptom of the Arctic's ice woes, though. They may accelerate the problems. According to the research published earlier this year by Thompson and a colleague, the waves may be a mechanism for accelerating ice retreat, which may in turn cause bigger waves. Self-perpetuating loop. Methane clathrate gun. Bad news. Sorry, folks. The result, according to Thompson, is a potentially new process. A vicious cycle that is expected to ultimately end in an ice-free summertime Arctic within, get this, decades. I want to stop there. This is quoting scientists. They are conservative, as I've said before. Within decades is technically correct. Scientists will always attempt to be technically correct. Now, speaking as a press analyst of a few decades now, we're going to see an ice-free summertime Arctic very soon. Very soon. And who's going to be surprised? But returning to the article, the science here is fairly simple. Less ice means more open water. When combined with the Arctic's sometimes strong winds, that water can more easily churn itself into bigger waves. It seems that's exactly what the new research has found. And this article is saying that these waves are tearing apart the ice. Returning to the article, Thompson and his team were in the Arctic again last week, deploying a new suite of solar-powered robotic oceanographers. The sensors are designed to measure the interaction between waves and the edge of the sea ice pack, in advance of this year's annual ice breakup and eventual nadir in September. So let's see what we have here. We're in August next month. Thompson says the data gathered this summer should provide a quantum leap in terms of measurement of Arctic waves. Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. A mystery crater spotted in the frozen Yamal Peninsula in Siberia earlier this month was probably caused by methane released as permafrost thawed, researchers in Russia say. More on that article from Nature.com, a scientific publication. But Harry's on the air. What's up, Harry?
Hey, how you doing? Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, it's kind of ironic about Gaza. It's like deja vu. 70 years ago, the same thing happened. Fascist troops surrounded an enclave of a religious minority, and that was called the Warsaw uprising.
And those who resisted were called terrorists.
Yes, remember that. But this has been going on for 7 years.
Well, I was born 13 years after that war, so I can't say that I remember that, but I certainly have read about it.
Yeah, the Warsaw uprising, and in Poland, but during World War II. So that was 70 years ago. So it's kind of like deja vu. It's still going on. So it's kind of ironic this is still going on. But
yeah, and I would just say man's inhumanity to man, except that the U.S. is very much complicit, as. Glenn Greenwald recently exposed the U.S. is very, very, very complicit in the whole thing, and then stands to one side and says, oh, those darn Israelis, after setting them up, after doing the logistics for them, after sharing satellite data, after sharing weaponry, after sharing billions of dollars in cash and saying, go, dog, go. Then
yeah,
Obama stands aside and says, we hope we can find peace.
Yeah, Amy Goodman mentioned on her show a couple years ago that Germany during this time in the Gaza Strip, chocolate is prohibited. Then when the Israeli troops search, chocolate is prohibited from entering Gaza, just like it happened at the in Warsaw.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. I don't know what to say. Perhaps you heard that Google had a Kill the Palestinians game recently and was forced to take it off. Yeah. What can you say about this? Thank you for your call. Number to call, 503-231-8187. Talking about that mystery crater. Yes, it's methane. Air near the bottom of the crater contained unusually high concentrations of methane, up to 9.6%. Let's see. 9.6%. If it had that much methane in the studio here, I sure as heck wouldn't light a candle. Anyway, in tests conducted at the site on the 16th of July, an archaeologist at the Scientific Center of Arctic Studies in Salakhard, Russia, discovered that. His name is Andrei Plekhanov. Plekhanov, who led an expedition to the crater, says that air normally contains just 0.0001% methane. Since the hole was spotted in mid-July by a helicopter pilot, conjecture has abounded about how the 30-meter-wide crater was formed. Gas or missile explosion, meteorite impact, alien involvement have all been suggested, but Plekhanov and his team believe that it was linked to the abnormally hot Yamal summers of 2012 and 2013, which were warmer than usual by an average of about 5 degrees centigrade as temperatures rose. The researchers suggest permafrost thawed and collapsed, releasing methane that had been trapped in the icy ground. Other researchers argue that long-term global warming might be to blame, and that a slow and steady thaw in the region could have been enough to free a burst of methane and create such a big crater. Over the past 20 years, permafrost at depth of 20 meters has been warmed by about 2 degrees centigrade, driven by rising air temperatures. And there's more on that article at nature.com. And as I was saying before, if you stay tuned to KBOO Portland, your community radio station, which we support by your contributions and which are not dependent on corporations running away to try to sell stuff on the internet, then you will find an awesome interview coming up right now with Per Fogring. So why don't you do that? Stay right here on KBOO Portland. Listen to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, other frequencies in the region, and on the World Wide Web to all the ships at sea.
approaching Newport, Rhode Island.
KBOO and the Clinton Street Theater are proud to present one of the great concert films of all time, Jazz on a Summer's Day, a documentary of the 1958 Newport Jazz Festival. Jazz on a Summer's Day captures the music, the crowd, and the essence of such jazz greats as Louis Armstrong, Thelonious Monk, Jerry Mulligan, and Anita O'Day. Jazz on a Summer's Day, Thursday, August 14, 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street, Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Old rockin' chair's got me.
Old rockin' chair got your father. ¶¶